Another week, another win, another Boren Blitz with the former Ohio State captain, Zach Boren, to break it all down after Ohio State wins 34-0 on Saturday at Wisconsin. And the only thing that can stop this perfect rhythm of wins and routine and consistency is an improvement week. And we've got another one as the Buckeyes head into off week number two, 7-0. Zach, what did you make of the beatdown in Madtown on Saturday?
Anytime you can go on the road in conference play and shut the other team out, it's a great day. It's a phenomenal day. So, you know, I thought the Bucks played great, obviously. Do I think there's some things to work on? Most definitely. I think this bye week is coming at the absolute perfect time. And the only reason why I say that is because everyone knows who's been a fan, been around the program for a long time, been covering the team. November is when that championship run starts. And so getting a bye week going into November 1st, man, it schedule setting up perfect for them, and it is a great time for them to evaluate where they're at, what they're doing really well, what they need to clean up, and then hit the ground running.
All right, so clearly you're talking about a to-do list that includes the Ohio State rushing attack. We know that. We've been talking about it for several weeks. And I say this half tongue-in-cheek, Zach. Hey, why not just keep throwing it 42 times a game? That seems to work just fine.
I don't think it's out of the question. I think what we saw on Saturday is that Ryan Day, Brian Hartline, in this Ohio State offensive staff is going to rely on Julian Sain and these wide receivers to make more plays, take the brunt of the work. The only thing is, and everyone might be like, okay, yeah, that's great. Why don't we do it? It's not sustainable every single game, especially when you're playing in the Big Ten and, you know, the weather starts to change. You're going up to Ann Arbor, Michigan, and it's 22 degrees, right? And you need to wear down the clock against a big physical football team. So I completely agree that I think Julian Sain should be getting, you know, 30-plus passing attempts a game. But you have to have the run game in order to be sustainable through the month of November in the Big Ten championship game and then in a playoff run. We saw it last year, right? I think there were a lot of people that were saying, hey, you got Carnell, Emeka, and Jeremiah. You know, Will Howard was crushing it. And especially, you know, what was the big flaw in the Michigan game last year? Hey, we're trying to run it too much. Why don't we come out slinging the football, right? Yeah. It's just not sustainable to go out and throw the ball 40, 50 times a game. I guess unless you're in the Big 12 and, you know, you want to play that style of football. But as we know, you can't win national championships playing that style of football.
Yeah, no, and certainly Ohio State proved that a year ago. The biggest difference for them was when they needed to get third and two, when they needed to get third and four, they had a lot of options where they could do that on the ground in the push throughout that playoff to the national championship. And right now, that really just doesn't seem to be the case with Ohio State. Now, there was a pretty interesting comment on Wednesday, Zach, and I don't know if it applies specifically to the Wisconsin win or not, but Ryan Day was talking about the run game, that he did not seem all that concerned about it overall. Now, he's talked about it plenty, and he said that they wanted the explosives, but he said before the game that they hadn't really schemed up explosives, and it was like he was saying they weren't trying to get that done at this point. And I don't know if I'm reading that the wrong way, reading too much into it. I know that there have been stretches in these last four games where Ohio State is winning comfortably. And we've talked about the pace of play and the monotony that, you know, suffocating opponents, that he's okay winning lower scoring games, quote unquote. They won by 34 yesterday again. But is there something to that we are just not seeing the full picture? Or are you with me where the frustration is like, okay, you could not scheme up explosives, but you have better players and maybe some of these could hit more frequently than 28 carries for 98 yards against Wisconsin?
I don't think, you know, he says scheme up explosives. Now, maybe that's doing some different things. We should be getting explosive runs out of basic runs, right? Like the scheming up explosive, you don't scheme those up. Those just happen, right? That's guys making plays. That's offensive linemen blowing people off the ball. That's creating separation, right? They used to call it depth in the offensive line. If it's just straight across the line, you're not going to break it, right? The more push you get creates more space, which then running backs have two-way goes, and that's where you hit the big one. So even if you're running basic runs nonstop, if you have some dudes and guys are making plays, right, they should pop. Here are two things that I saw on Saturday that I think Ohio State should build on. Don't know if they will, but I think they should. Isaiah West is a beast. And I think going back and forth between Bo Jackson and Isaiah West, and I know it's two freshmen going out there, but that two-headed monster man's dynamic. And some of those runs that Isaiah West had on Saturday, it's there, right? Like there's just that it factor, whether it be the explosiveness through the hole, whether it be the shiftiness in the second level and making people miss. There's just an it factor to it that's just different when Isaiah West and Bo Jackson is touching the football. So I think as the season goes on, I think you need to build on that. And nothing against C.J. Donaldson or James Peoples. I think C.J. Donaldson is a very tough runner, but he doesn't give you that explosiveness that those other two do. The other thing is Josh Padilla's got to be the starting right guard. I mean, I think and nothing against Tegra. I just think Josh Padilla is an animal, man. I think he is a road grader. I think he gets a big time push. He's one of those guys that, you know, as a former heavyweight wrestler, a little bit of a shorter guy, but what he's able to do is get below the defense alignment pads and really drive guys off the ball. And that's what's going to create your separation. And so watching the game on Saturday, you could see where some of those explosive runs came, and you start to look and 62 is on the field, right? I just think it's something that, hey, you've got enough data so far. You have enough game time film to then come November, you got to make a decision on what's best for my team. And I think right now 62 is way better than 77.
Yeah, he's now had several weeks in a row of stacking some of these performances and getting out there and producing when called on. And, you know, Tegra has played a ton of football for Ohio State. Tegra Tshabola was integral to the national championship push a year ago. I get all that. And I think if some of the hesitancy through the first seven games was, well, you know where the floor is with Tegra Tshabola. You know it's going to be a pretty competent baseline consistency from him. Don't want to upset the apple cart with a major move in the starting line. I totally get all that. But now you're seven games into the season and you're starting to look ahead and you want to play nine more. There's ample opportunity, especially with the off week coming here, where you could make that move and bring Josh Padilla into the lineup. And if this had only happened once or twice, both with Tegra Tshabola maybe missing a block or having a false start, committing a penalty, you know, you're going to make mistakes over the course of the year. But Ohio State has paired that with either Ethan Onyanwa or Josh Padilla going in the game in all seven games. It feels like they know that there may be an issue at right guard, and they're walking up, inching up closer to the precipice to making that move. And maybe it will be an off week and a chance to give Josh Padilla maybe, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, first team reps this week, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday to prepare for Penn State. I don't know. You and I don't know. Mm-hmm. And while Ohio State's coaching staff, like Ryan Day, have asked about this position multiple times and said, well, Tegra is grading out well. And internally, I believe them. I have no reason to be skeptical of that. It hasn't always matched up with what you're seeing on Saturdays in the eye test. And then the PFF grades, we always say take those with a grain of salt. But, you know, whether that was Onyanwa before or Padilla now, those players have been grading out higher according to those, you know, outside neutral observers. The internal grades matter more. I totally get that. But if you're looking at what could spark this run game, I think there's two different personnel changes you can make. You mentioned both of them. Isaiah West going into the lineup more to complement Bo Jackson and looking, I don't know, harder or closer at a move at right guard.
Yeah, and it's not that Tegra is a bad player, right? I don't think either of us are saying that.
No.
What we're saying is if you want the run game to be more explosive, you need more of a road grader in there, and that's Josh Padilla, right? And I think if you were to take a snippet of the first seven games of the season, that might be the only tiny flaw is the lack of explosive plays in the run game and the lack of being able to just dominate a team up front. And when you start looking at that, guard center guard is your most important position in the run game. And people might be like, why? Well, guess what? It doesn't matter if you run right or you run left. The guard center and guard on both sides are going to be involved in the run game, right? You might have a backside tackle, and if he doesn't get a big push or, you know, doesn't have the greatest block, there's a lot of times a running back with speed's going to be able to beat that end man on the line of scrimmage. Well, when the backside guard gets beat either across his face or behind, guess what? That guy's got the space in order to cut down on the running back, and you saw it multiple times yesterday, right? And then obviously front side, it's even more of an issue when you're not creating that space. And so you start looking at the way this team is built, and yes, they're going to throw the football. We know that. But when the performance in the pass game is apples to apples, you have to go with the guy who's got the advantage in the run game, and that's Josh Padilla. And I think everyone can see that. Everyone understands that, right? Tegra is a bigger dude, taller dude. Padilla is going to be a road grader in your face, move people off the ball. And so when they're apples to apples from a pass pro standpoint, like, you got to go with that guy. You know, like I said, Tegra's a really good player. I'm not saying that he, you know, we need to forget about him. I just think you need to put Padilla in the game and start him and see what you can do with giving him all the reps and see what that can do. Padilla's going to be a much better puller than Tegra is, right? He's a little bit shorter, more athletic. There's just so many more things that you can do with Montgomery, Hinsman, and Padilla than you can when you put Tegra in there.
Yeah, we'll see if that leads to anything in heading into that November stretch, starting with Penn State, and now a little over a week and a half. We know that they're going to be able to throw the football, Zach. I think we kind of said a week ago coming out of the Illinois win for Julian Sand, it was like, well, it was the quote-unquote worst outing of his career. Just wasn't quite as sharp, wasn't quite as effective. It was still pretty good. No one was saying it was a bad performance, but the first six, you look in that sample size, like, well, one stood out. And then 1 week later, here you go, 36 for 42, 393 yards, four touchdowns. The Heisman race is about to get more interesting for Julian Sand. That is the kind of performance that people cannot ignore.
Well, especially what happened Friday night down in Miami, Florida, right? And so you
saw Julian Sand throwing four touchdowns is better than Carson Beck throwing four interceptions?
Correct. Correct.
Okay, that is correct.
What I think people don't realize, but now are starting to see it, and it's just across the national media, I think it's fans in general, the quick release that Julian Sand has packaged with the placement of the football is next level, like next level. And some of the throws on Saturday, especially the first two touchdowns, Carnell Tate, I mean, even the balls on the sideline, like Mylon Graham had a great grab on the sideline and the ball placement was impeccable. There are so many throws that Julian Sane makes easy, like it looks easy, that are so difficult that I don't think people realize like what he's doing, right? Like there's some throws in the game that my jaw's on the ground, but he makes it look like a routine throw, right? And even the commentators are just like, guys, this is next level, you know, the ball placement, where, you know, putting it right where only the receiver can get it and putting it away where, guess what? The receiver can literally, it's eye level, so they're making the catch while they're be able to concentrate on their feet and stay in bounds. So I think Ryan is starting to see what Julian is, and I'm not saying that in a bad way that, you know, Ryan doesn't know his personnel. I just think it takes some games to actually realize, like, once the bullets are flying and things are alive, What do I have in this guy, right? Julian took some hits on Saturday. Probably the first time he's really taken that many hits in a game so far this year, right? He even pulled one. I was like, oh my God, right? In the read option, and he pulled it and got 8-9 yards, whatever it was, you know, and slid. Like, you started to see them kind of be like, all right, this isn't the 180-pound soaking wet kid from Southern California that showed up, you know, whatever, 18 months ago, 20 yeah. months ago, right? This is a kid who's turning into a young man that can lead this team to very promising things. And I think the coaches are starting to realize that, which is why they're putting more things on his plate, which is why they're opening up the offense and saying, Julian, we're going to start riding you, buddy. It's your time.
Yeah. Ryan Day said that after the game, which is like, I was hoping to hear it. I didn't know if he would be as direct about it, which was like, he said this was a game where they wanted to find out where they actually were with the passing attack. Cause I know going back to the Texas game and at the start of the year, there's only so much that you were going to ask of Julian Sain against a very talented defense, a college football playoff contender in your first start. I understand all that. We get that. We've talked about it a lot, but it's the stacking of things one after the other. And it was like, okay, you can kind of do some of this. You're going to hesitate when people have talked about the softer coverage and putting the shell back that Ohio State, you know, is facing defensive schemes that are designed to take away Jeremiah Smith, designed to take away the deep shots. At some point, you still have to be able to have the confidence and the wherewithal to hit them. And Ohio State was intent on doing that on Saturday. And Ryan Day's like, we're gonna test you. You're afforded the luxury, for one, because we still have not talked about the defense we're going to get to. Yeah. You can take some of those shots when you know that the silver bullets aren't going to give anything up. But Ryan Day said, this is the game. We wanted to see where the passing attack truly was. And if that's the barometer, I mean, good luck, because Jeremiah Smith, still awesome. Carnell Tate, awesome. You saw Brandon Ennis make a tremendous play in the back of the end zone to get himself some confidence with a touchdown. You saw a little bit of, you know, gadget work in the red zone, play action to get it to Will Kaczmarek for another touchdown. And then the things that you mentioned, I think, that were maybe more impressive, not more impressive, just as impressive, Zach, was even on that first Carnell touchdown throw, sliding in the pocket, buying time, like the feel for the poise and presence with the football back there. That's the next level stuff. The ball placement specialist, yeah, check that box. But yeah, he's so comfortable working in the pocket. And that's, I don't know that you really teach that. That's sort of like an inherent ability. You can do that or you can't.
Here's the other thing, Austin, that, you know, you brought up a great point, is that defenses are still playing multiple guys deep, two deep, sometimes three deep in a cover three look, to make sure everything stays underneath and they aren't getting beat deep, right? If you think about yesterday, truly, there were like two quote-unquote deep shots taken, and the Carnell Tate touchdown was number one, but really it was what, a 20-yard throw, 20-something-yard throw, right? And then the other one was Jeremiah Smith, which, again, was probably a 25-yard throw, not complete. But he's putting up almost 400 yards of passing without any deep shots, right? And those deep shots are the big chunk plays where you're getting 40, 50, 60 yards a rip from that standpoint. And so Julian Sain in this wide receiving core is able to do this by hitting 8, 10, 12-yard passes, right, and just working their way down the field. And so, Austin, you're spot on that they're still putting up these numbers and it opened up the passing game when people are double and triple teaming Jeremiah Smith, right? Let's call a spade a spade. People are going into games saying, we are going to take out Jeremiah Smith. And I just hope he's not getting frustrated, right? He's still having a hell of a year, probably not a Jeremiah Smith year that he was anticipating. Right. But when you have two or three guys on you, what are you supposed to do, right? When they're taking everything away, what are you supposed to do? Well, Julian Sain, what's he do? Turns to Carnell Tate, who's been an absolute monster this year. Turns to Max Clair. Turns to Will Kaczmarek. Turns to, how many times is he making the smart move and checking it down to the running backs that are, yep, you know, getting chunk plays in the passing game from that? Like, he's making all of the right decisions and not forcing anything down the field, which is, I think, what people need to bring up as well, is that he could be a young dude and wants the, you know, rainbow throws that are beautiful and you know, explosive, and that's what everyone's talking about. But no, he's sitting there and just methodically marching them down the field with his arm. And so, Austin, you hit the nail on the head, man. They are doing all of this without being able to throw the ball down the field, because that's what everyone's taken away.
Yeah, and the second that you want to play them straight up, man, Julian Sain has already shown he can hit those shots. So
good luck. I'm waiting for someone to do it. And to be honest, I don't think Penn State might, right? Like Jim Knowles might come in here and say, screw it. We're gonna send pressure every single play. He might. I don't know if he will, because I don't know if Jim Knowles wants a 50 burger hung on him, but that could happen. I don't think it will happen to Ann Arbor, Michigan. Wink Martindale is going to throw some different looks at them and try and run some man coverage. It's just what he's going to do, right? Yeah. I'm excited for that. Let's just put it that way. I am super excited for that because, to your point, when a team finally shows man coverage against these guys, good luck. Because I don't know how you stop them.
Seems unlikely that you will. I know this doesn't apply to you, Zach. It's me. I'm in charge of the flow of this show, and we've not talked about the Silver Bullets in a shutout on the road nearly enough. So I guess I'm taking for granted how elite this defensive is. But that performance on Saturday, I know Wisconsin's limited. I know that they were without some key pieces, that their backup quarterback is out there, and they've been a mess all year. You still expect teams to be able to string together one or two drives, get a field goal, get a touchdown in there. They tried to get one late for a little cosmetics on the scoreboard. I just kept writing, well, three and out again. I think at one point it was like six of the first seven drives were three and outs. And I don't know what else to say about them. This is just such an impressive performance week in and week out. The consistency that Matt Patricia and then Larry Johnson and James Laurinaitis and Matt Guerrieri and Tim Walton have all shown, and the buy-in from the Buckeyes on defense has been truly amazing to watch.
Austin, you are spot on. And people might laugh when I say this, but I am dead serious. I don't care if Ohio State was playing Capital or Ohio Dominican or whoever. It is so hard to hold a team to a shutout. Because guess what? Anything can happen, right? Like you said, like people are going to have some chunk plays. People are going to have some explosive plays, right? There's a missed tackle here, a missed tackle there. You still get in the red zone and either kick a field goal, score a touchdown, whatever. To shut a team out is and hold them to, what was the total? 146 yards, maybe? 146 total?
Final total was 144.
144. Okay, I was off by 2 yards. When you're able to hold a team to 144 yards of total offense, like, that's just an ass beating. There's no other way to put it, that when you are able to dominate a game like that and force them into all of those three and outs, and heck, Austin, I don't even know this, but as of that 144, is 22 of them from the punter on the fake punt, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely.
That's going to count, right?
Because that's how it goes down.
Yeah, so that was 22 yards, right? So you're really holding the team to 122 yards of total offense, which is absolutely insane from that standpoint. And to your point, we don't want to take them for granted. They deserve all the roses and all the praise that they get. But it's almost like this defense is so good that now it's the expectation. And that's what makes it scary, right? You don't want people to think, fans, media, whatever, for that to be the expectation. Now, if it is, my God, I don't even know what to say. I'm speechless. But we can't. We got to have a full understanding that when you're going into November, it doesn't matter who you play, it's very hard to shut out teams. It's very hard to hold people to under 150 yards of total offense. Hell, it's super hard to hold teams under 200 yards of total offense, right? I mean, it's Division I college football players. These guys are dudes. But the way that they all work together, whether it be the defensive line, whether it be the linebackers always filling the gap that they're supposed to fill, right? Like, if there's any kind of opening, you see a linebacker close it so freaking quick, and especially comes downhill and smacks dudes in the hole. Like, I can't tell you how many times it looked like there was a wide open gash, and Peyton Pierce or Orville Reese or Sonny Styles came down on Saturday and just closed the gap and next thing you know, it's a 1 or 2 yard gain from that standpoint, right? And then you look at the back end. Those guys are always on the same page. Those guys are always working together, disguising coverages. And at the end of the day, they're just ballers, man. They go out and they make plays. They do what they're supposed to do. Another turnover this week after coming off three turnovers against Illinois, right? So there are so many things that continue to build on with this defense. But at the end of the day, they're just playing confident and flying around with the football. I mean, that's what defense is about. Confidence, flying around with the football, and playing with some tenacity from that standpoint, right? When you get to the football, how do you get there? And those guys are coming ready to play every single Saturday. They're owning it, man. They're taking the expectation, and they are taking it to the umpteenth degree.
Yeah, and you know, there's no let up. They're not getting complacent about it. They're not getting bored with winning. They're not getting bored with pursuing the football. Like, they're doing all the little things right, which is the only way that you can, shut out a Big Ten opponent on the road. So I imagine I'm gonna make a prediction as we get to the three and out on the Bourne Blitz that probably the entire defense is going to get one of the three Buckeye leaves.
100%. You already know it. We've been doing this too long. I mean, how do you single anyone out, right? And I just went through the whole spiel of the defense line played their butts off, man. The linebackers running sideline to sideline, making plays left and right. The back end, man, like, doing great things. Like, you know, I mean, my God, they're suffocating back there, right? You even see Roker back there getting some PT, man, and breaking on the football and doing what he's supposed to do. So those guys, they come up ready to play. They got their hard hats on, lunch pails packed, man, and they go to work. So, if Ryan Day said, when you have a defense like that, it's easy to play offense, right? You can take those chances. You can do what you need to do. You also got to give a Buckeye leaf to Julian Sain. I mean, we talked for 15 minutes on the show about Julian Sain, and I think it's about time that a Heisman talk come. You know, I felt like, you know, obviously it should have been there for CJ. CJ was invited, but, you know, maybe got the short end of the stick just because people didn't talk about it as much and push it. People need to start talking about Julian Sain in this Heisman race. And you start looking at his numbers, the completion percentage, what he's able to do and the way he controls an offense. When you start looking at the number of plays that Ohio State has in a game compared to some of these other teams like Alabama, right? Everyone wants to talk about Ty Simpson. They hammer out plays, right? They go fast paced. You want to talk about Mendoza with Indiana. They are flying. And I would love to see the contrast between the number of offensive snaps that Julian Sain has compared to those other guys. Because I can guarantee you, Julian Sain is way more efficient than those guys. And the stats that he's putting up are leaps and bounds above what they would be doing in the number of plays from that standpoint. Right. And then my other Buckeye leaf, I could say, you know, the entire wide receiving core, because they made some unreal grabs, but we got to talk about Carnell Tate. Just the way that he has, I don't want to say elevated his game, but, you know, when I was watching the game yesterday and I was talking to someone, it's like everyone wants to talk about Jeremiah Smith, and by all means, I love talking about Jeremiah Smith, right? He is one of one. He is one of one, and I don't know if Ohio State – he's a generational player, right? I don't know if Ohio State will have another guy like him for a very long time. But what I will say is Carnell Tate could have put his head down and say, hey, listen, I'm not the star. I'm not the guy. Instead, he worked his butt off, and you see him just absolutely elevating his game to now being a first-round draft pick next year. And what he's doing week in and week out this year, doing the dirty work, as Ryan talks about each and every week, goes up and makes the contested catches, man, does what he's supposed to do, whether it be running his route and realizes, hey, listen, I'm number two. Right? Jeremiah, I know, is number one. But when I go out there, I'm going to freaking bust my ass down the field and get open. And I know my quarterback's going to give it to me when I'm open. And you're starting to see Julian Sain and Carnell have this magical connection, man, that it's almost like every time Carnell gets out of his break, I think it's happened every week so far. Carnell gets out of his break on the sidelines and Julian Sain has the football right there. And Carnell Tate literally has a toe touch drag right on the sideline. Like, it's like clockwork. And that's timing, that's connection, that's all of it. And so just the way Carnell Tate has elevated his game into, you know, we touched on it again earlier, when a team finally decides to go man against these guys, it's not just going to be Jeremiah Smith. It's going to be Carnell Tate going off as well. Yeah. And so kudos to him, man. I know, you know, growing up in Chicago, not that far from Madison, Wisconsin. So not a true homecoming, but without playing Northwestern this year, kind of a homecoming. So no, man, he absolutely crushed it.
Yeah. Awesome weekend for Carnell Tate, Julian Sand, everybody. I mean, a 34-0 win, you have to spread the credit around. And we did, I think, one of the longest boring blitzes of the season. We got a lot to talk about heading into off week number two for Ohio State. As always, appreciate all the great insight from the captain, Zach Bourne. Probably have some things to talk about getting ready for Penn State a week from now when we get into a new week and another game week. But that will be it here as we close the book on a 34-0 win from Wisconsin. I'm heading back to the great state of Ohio, and at least for a couple of days before heading to Disney. But we'll get into all that stuff for the plan in the week ahead. Yes. Oh, yeah, it's time. It's not so scary time, baby. That's it. Out of Wisconsin, heading home. Thanks for joining us on a Monday on the beat. It was a boring blitz on the Austin and Burm show. Thanks to Zach. I am Austin Ward. We'll talk to you guys later. See ya.